We leave Colombia for new career opportunities. When we moved from our new home in Colombia to a rental home in Higginsville, there was confusion in our mind about the ownership of the Colombia home. But as time went on, we realized that the Colombia home was really just a rental. No equity to take with us, but we also had no initial equity in the home except the sweat equity of Peg and a little of mine. Peg worked hard even though she was pregnant with Matt. Matt was born on July 18, 1962, 2 weeks before we moved to Higginsville. His full name was Matthew Edward Sloan, Matt after a favorite classmate at Hickman, Matt Flynn, who looked like the TV comedian Dick Van Dyke and was just as funny. Edward was after Peg's uncle Ed Laster, who had raised her after Peg's dad died. Peg's uncle Ed was as fine a man as ever lived. Matt was 10 pounds and 4 ounces. The doctor, Dr. C, said it was the second biggest baby he ever delivered from someone Peg's size, 5 and 96 pounds. Lord, was he ugly. They put him in the glass viewing area by a set of twins that weighed 4.5 pounds apiece. Looked like King Kong next to a small monkey. Big blonde hair on his turban-shaped head. Never believed in evolution, but he did cause me to question my belief. But like his brother, he turned out to be a beautiful baby boy. Doug walked at 6 months, but Matt walked at 14 months. We initially thought something was wrong with Matt, but he was just different. Happy and laid back. The home we rented in Higginsville had a nice basement, yard, and was ideal for the four of us plus Saben. From a coaching standpoint, my first season was somewhat of a rude shock. We had really good talent but probably played the toughest schedule in MOHS ranks that year, including Jeff City, who was the state's powerhouse. We were 2-8, and I realized that it was mostly my fault. I think in that season 2 of our losses were to undefeated teams and 4 more were to teams who lost but one game. I had not fully set in my mind the type of offense and defense I wanted to run. Fatal mistake. If I had coached these same kids a few years later, we probably would have had a winning season in spite of the stiff competition we faced. For my own professional development, I probably should have stayed under Coach Rourke for 2 to 3 years before embarking on my own. To this day, I feel I let those kids down. One of my 2 assistant coaches was a black older gentleman named Sam Duncan. A prince of a man who taught French in HS, single and an excellent cook. After each loss, Sam would say, "Things are never so bad, that they couldn't get worse from the time that you're born, till you ride in the hearse." Years later, they named the FB Stadium after him. Very, very fitting. After my dismal season, I assisted basketball coach Jim Perrine and we finished 4th in the state playoffs in our class. The Higginsville Huskers played extremely well. So in my first 2 years as an assistant in basketball, I was part of a state championship team and one that finished 4th. Both, memorable thrills. I knew that my 2-8 season would not be well received by the school board, but my supt. Dr. Jack Bell stood behind me. However, he did tell me that he never saw a good FB coach who didn't drink. Since I had never had a drink of an alcoholic beverage then or to this day, age 77, I sure wanted to prove his theory wrong. I cannot remember, with certainty, exactly what year I was offered the head FB coaching job at Central Methodist College in Fayette, MO. Think it was 63 or 64. I met with the president. The salary was no better than what I was earning, and they also required to teach every 3rd summer free. Summer income had become very important. I declined the job, which would have made me the youngest head college FB coach in America. In retrospect, I wasn't ready to take on that task. As fate would intervene, the FB job at Centralia HS. Panthers had opened up and was about 40 minutes from my home in Colombia. The pay was a bit better and I knew many more people there than in Higginsville. I applied and got the job. So another move, now preparing for the 63-64 school year. I finished my master's degree in 63 and my college advisor at Missouri was Dr. Neil Aslin, who had been our school superintendent in HS and was the dad of Jack Aslin, one of my HS teammates. When we did move to Centralia, I soon found out that we had a great superintendent, Dr. Chester Boren. He liked his athletics and was a most able supt. A week before school opened, the new HS principal was killed in a car wreck and the school year started on a tragic note. My talent pool was not as good as what I had at Higginsville, but our schedule was not as tough. I had but marginally improved on deciding on my offense and defense approach, torn between what I played under at Missouri and what I coached under at Hickman. You cannot thoroughly teach players based on mixed systems. We finished 4-6 and lost a couple of games after our very good starting QB broke his arm. Still, we should have had a winning season. Losses can be an excellent but brutal teacher, and I became more determined than ever to be successful. I taught American history and boys and girls PE. Problem: how do I ascertain that the girls showered after physical ed? Perhaps the Lord spoke to me, and I would stand outside the girls' locker room door with a Bible and have each girl put her hand on the Bible and swear she took a shower. No ACLU concerns in those days. I assisted in basketball, was head track coach, and all of those duties went well. In the spring of 64, I got word that Carthage HS in SWMO was looking for a new head FB coach and that the president of the school board wanted a MO grad and they were willing to pay $7,200. I was making $5,600, and that would be a big jump to go from $5,600 to $7,200. I applied and was offered the job. The Carthage superintendent was Lester Gilman, who loved basketball and hated FB. I learned this later. His first offer to me was $5,800, and I wanted the job but politely told Mr. Gilman that I couldn't come for that salary. I hung up hoping I had not made a mistake. A couple days later he calls and offers $6,400, which is a pretty healthy increase. Knowing that they were willing to pay $7,200, I swallowed real hard, and repeated that I simply could not move for that salary and hung up. Next day, same call offering $7,200, and I said yes. It's true, knowledge is power. So now we move about 5 hours south of Centralia to Carthage, MO. At one time in MO history, Carthage had more millionaires per capita than any other MO city. We found a home right across the FB field, which was separated from the HS. We were the Carthage Tigers. I soon found out the talent pool was almost empty. We had but three senior who were talented and were winners. The rest were young, inexperienced, and would not be producing many wins anytime soon. Here was my first real challenge in building a FB program from ground zero. That first year we were 3-7, but I could see we were headed for improvement. I began an intense program of rigorous workouts and discipline on and off the field. In year 2 we finished 5-5, and I felt that we were turning the corner for increased success, as the 66-67 school approached. Our daughter Lori Ellen Sloan arrived on March 18, 1966. All three of our kids were born on the 18th, including our elk hound, Saben. The Sloan family was now complete. All three kids born in Columbia at Boone County Hospital, all with Dr. C. During Lori's birth, Dr. C. induced labor as he was concerned about delivering another very large baby. I was in Columbia and heading back to the hospital while Peg was awaiting the inducement to kick in. I had a really bad cough and cold and took a big swig of my sister's asthma medicine, which had codeine in it. I then stopped by Uncle Ed and Aunt Sadie's house to get some things. As I headed to the hospital still coughing, I took some of Ed's medicine for emphysema, which also had codeine in it. By the time I got to the hospital I was almost asleep on my feet. I sat by Peg's bedside with my head on the bed fighting to stay awake. The nurse came in and said, "That's the most unconcerned father I've ever seen, serious or kidding." I was about out on my feet. Dr. C. sent me home in a cab and I slept for 16 hours straight and missed the birth of Lori. However, did not cough on new Sloan edition. At the time we had a beautiful 1964 Ford Thunderbird, emerald green with white landau top and white leather interior. Stunning car. But the back seat would only seat two little ones and certainly not three. So the T-Bird went and we bought a 1964 Olds 98. Top of the line. As we entered the season of 66, I could see and sense our improvement. we would now be contenders for the conference title. Our opener was always with Joplin, a much bigger school with a far greater talent pool. It was a non-conference game, but still an arch rival being so close to Carthage. They won in a close game and we went on to a 7-2-1 season and finishing second in our league. We had turned the corner on attitude and talent and our FB future was bright. Meanwhile, the subbed Lester Gilman was proving to be a real jerk. The more we succeeded, the more he hated FB and me. The school board president, who had pushed for a Mizzou grad, was now off the board, and Mr. Gilman and I had a rather frank discussion in the spring of my third year. When I left his office, I said, "Mr. Gilman, I will continue to do the best job I can and will let the chips fall where they may." The next year we repeated our 7-2-1 season, finishing second to the undefeated conference champion, Nevada HS, who beat us 14-7. We had beaten them the previous 2 years 7-6, and their head coach, Chuck Shelton, would later become my defensive coordinator at No. East MO.ST. Now Truman ST. University. In Kirksville, MO. He would also become my closest lifetime friend in coaching. Loved the guy. That year the school board fired Lester Gilman. In the spring I got a call from Marv Braden, head FB coach at No East MO.ST. Nemo, seeking my interest in becoming his line coach. I was thrilled, except I would be leaving what I knew would be my greatest team. But I felt I was ready for college ball and accepted the job. The team I left did make it to the state playoffs under my former assistant coach, Bob Fletcher, a solid coach. We had made so many truly great friends in Carthage, and one of those friendships, Jim and Sandy Spradling, would come back together in Jeff City in 1973. When we moved to Kirksville, MO in 1968, and we bought our first home on North New ST, north of town. It was in a brand new development and we were thrilled. Peg's Aunt Sadie gave us $1,800 for our down payment. The price of the home was $18,000. 3 bedrooms and a bath and a half. The head FB coach, Marv Braden, was a year older than me and had played his college ball at SWMO.ST. Now Missouri ST. And had come from the FB staff at Parsons College. This was his second year at Nemo, and he used the same basic defense, a stunting 5-2 front, that I had used at Carthage. Our defensive and offensive talent were pretty equal. Marv was very well organized, probably stronger on defense than offense, but overall a very capable coach. To his disadvantage, he followed a longtime legend at Nemo, Coach Red Wade. All of the Nemo FB alums wanted Red's assistant coach, Bill Richardson, to take Red's place. When that did not happen, the alums were very upset and probably were of little recruiting help to Marv. Bill Richardson, I would come to learn, was the best teacher/coach I ever met. He would have been a great coach at Nemo but was overlooked because the college president at that time, Dr. Ryle, hated Coach Red Wade and therefore would not hire his assistant, Bill Richardson. We finished the season at 5-4-1, and our biggest win was over Parsons College in Iowa, that had big ambitions of going to Ivy League. They were far bigger and more talented, but Marv surprised them using a new defense and we beat them on our home turf. Our players really rose to the challenge. We were in the NCAA Division II level with far less scholarships, 40 or 45 as I remember, which could be issued as full, three quarters, half or quarter, so that you could build a two-platoon squad with as many kids as possible getting some form of financial aid. However, for a really gifted player it would take a full scholarship. We also encouraged walk-on players who simply wanted to have a chance to play and show us what they could do. Our last game of the year was against the Rolla Miners, a great engineering school in Rolla. It was a cold, cloudy, rainy day. We led the Miners late in the game and it was third down and we had the ball at about our 35-yard line. Marv called a pass in our left flat, hoping to get a first down and run out the clock. As he sent the play in, I looked at him and said, 11, they're going to intercept that and go for a TD. 11 Marv. Gave me a blank look, and as we watched the play develop, The pass was intercepted by Rala and they took it in for the winning TD. Nothing was said. We were cold, wet, and deflated. Marv's wife, Becky, was really upset with his call as she was sitting by Peg and our kids in the stands. It was a silent ride back to Kirksville. Even the greatest of coaches will make a bad call, i.e. the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl in 2015. Marv was a solid coach, just a bad call. Shortly after the end of that 68 season, Marv applied for and got the head FB job at San Diego Universal in California. That left me and the other full-time assistant coach, Bill Holmes, left and we both sought the position. Bill had played at Nemo and I'm sure was favored by more of the Nemo alums. The college president was Dr. Clark Elkins, who was having his own serious problems with the board and may not have had as keen an interest in who filled the FB coaching position. I had Coach Frank Broyles call President Elkins in my behalf and I'm sure that was helpful. Coach Broyles was outstanding in helping his former players, even a skinny sophomore like me who had played for him during our one season together in 57. My downside was the fact that I had run as a Republican for county clerk in 1960, which caused some discomfort for the Nemo board president, an attorney, and avid Democrat. After several weeks of awaiting some decision, I was called to attend the board meeting of the college. I was offered and accepted the job. However, I noticed that the president was quiet and subdued. Shortly thereafter, I learned that the night the board hired me, they fired the president. I think my salary was $14,400, which was double my earnings just 2 years ago in Carthage. I sensed that the players were pleased with the decision and now I must hire my own assistants and begin recruiting. At this time the good Lord smiled on me again. Ron Toman, my teammate at Missouri, was on the FB staff at Wichita St when their head coach was fired and he was out of a job. In a great twist of fate, had Ron stayed at Wichita St, he might have been on the plane that crashed, killing a number of the FB team and coaches. Ron was a tremendous coach and he and his wife Bobby had 5 kids. I then interviewed a young man fresh out of the Marine Corps, Bruce Craddock, who had played at Nemo. Both were outstanding hires and would prove their worth many times over. My first recruit target was Lenville Elliott, an all-state running back from Richmond, MO. He was a 11B11 Ave student and had a great attitude. I then hit St. Louis hard along with a few key kids in Illinois. Nemo had several superb HS coaches in the greater St. Louis area. I was intent on winning them over. At one point I thought I had lost Elliott to University of Texas at El Paso, but when he returned from visiting there he called and asked me, 11 coach, can I still come? I couldn't say yes fast enough. Lenville would go on to a 9-year career in the pros and winning a Super Bowl ring with the San Francisco 49ers in Super Bowl 16. He was the first player from our conference, Missouri Intercollegiate Athletic Association MIAA, to win a Super Bowl ring. Our recruiting efforts turned out to far exceed my hopes. We had a great class of father and a strong core of returnees. At the DIV 2 level you were not allowed spring football with pads. Therefore we had a variety of drills that were demanding and instilled the toughness we expected from our players. Because we also had an excellent track program headed by Coach Kenny Gardner, we were able to attract Tom Jardine, future pro from Kansas City, and later, Larry Jones from Lemery, Calf. Another future pro and the fastest quarter miler in the world in 1973. Likely would have won the Olympics if he had not signed with the Redskins. I also had a very gifted athlete named Mike Behrens, who was a talented decathlon athlete, and Marv had used him as our running back. I moved him to a wide receiver as I now had Elliott as our principal running back. Proved to be a winning move. I then took our defense and primarily changed our coverage in the secondary from 2-man to man 2 to a zone defense. Also proved to be more productive based on the talent we had. Our athletic DIR, Jim Doherty, was a very fair and likable man who would not take the lead in doing certain things that would benefit the program, but would allow you to do it and not be an obstructionist. He was not egocentric. I knew that we needed to put a new face on our image and program. We carved out space in an older storage building by the field and created a recreation room for our players, including a pool table. As coaches, we built the sofas and did the remodel. We also dressed up the lodging quarters for the players, called to the kennels since we were bulldogs. Peg made curtains for the rooms and we got new bedding for the rooms. We flew the American flag each morning in front of the kennels. We later carpeted the locker room, and in doing that created a new atmosphere and dramatically reduced the horseplay. I ordered purple sweaters for our players on team trips for a professional and cohesive look. I also created a group called the Touchdown Girls, outfitted them in purple and white attire and purple shoes. Their job was to help show recruits around campus and help with parents and recruits on game days at home. To further promote our program, I had each player photographed in color, in uniform, posing on the field on one knee. Standing beside them was one of our Touchdown Girls. We had the photos framed beautifully, with an inserted card describing their name, height, weight, position, etc. We mailed these to each HS, knowing that the coach would likely hang that in his office or locker room for all to see. I knew of no other school in any division doing it as nicely as we did. The University of Pittsburgh sent a black and white photo in a cheap frame. Knew of no others, certainly not as nice as ours. All of these things had a very positive collective impact on our players. I told them that I wanted the best from them and for them. We dramatically changed our offensive and installed a very sophisticated passing game. We had an outstanding QB, Don Cummings, who was a junior. Great arm and accuracy, nice touch deep, smart, tough, and a winner. I had seen Don Foro use the shotgun offense against Oklahoma effectively in the early 50s and liked the extra time it would afford our QB to find the open receiver. We were the only team we faced in 3 years to use the two shotgun as part of an offense. We mixed our passing game with another 4-0 invention, the option play, now called the Veer, which was a variation of 4-0's split T offense. Our offensive line was on the small size, and our different formations, passing game, and options kept the defenses we faced off balance. In our first season, we tied for the Cont Championship going 6-2-1. One of those losses haunts me to this day, as it was our only home loss in 3 years, and a substitute official completely out of position ruled a two-point play good, costing us the win by 8-7 at the end of the game. The films clearly showed the Eastern ill. QB falling flat about a half yard from the end zone and then bouncing into the end zone. The substitute official made the call from the back of the end zone and not aligned with the goal line. Ron Toman had a superb offense mind, and we both loved the potential of our passing game. We had four really gifted receivers in Behrens, Jardine, Charlie Blakely, and Elliott out of the backfield. No DIV. I University had four better than these four. Beside the one loss at home to Eastern Ill, we lost one conference game to SEMO. ST in Cape Girardeau, where I would later serve as athletic director. We tied a very talented Lincoln University team 22-22 at home. Lincoln was coming into our conference the next season, and the university had historically been a black college. They had a longtime respected coach, Dwight Reed, and a cadre of very gifted talent. So, if not for that terrible blown call, we would have finished 7-1-1. But we were still co-champs. We finished that season playing Parsons College non-conference game at their place. They were still smarting from losing to us the year before. In the first 5 minutes of the game, they jumped out to a 14-0 lead. It looked like a blowout for them. But in a very gutsy performance, we came back to beat them 17-14. Immensely proud of that win. As we entered season 2, we had recruited several more key players, including a backup Hugo QB transfer from Wentworth Military Academy in Lexington, MO, by the name of Bob Gibson. I have not as yet mentioned the number of players we lost due to the demands of our program in the first year. Like Broyles at Missouri, my sophomore year, I wanted to find out who was willing to pay the price to be champions. We lost a bunch, but our survivors would only get better and better. It became a joke within the survivors about who left training camp in the dark of night to go home. In year two, we opened on the road against Western Ill. They were coached by Daryl Madra, a truly outstanding coach, and he had a powerhouse of talent. They beat us in a shootout, but we would return the favor the next year at our field. We went on to a 7-2 season and another co-championship, this time with Central Mo. St. University, who we beat 28-21 more later. Our one conference loss was to Lincoln at their place. We scored first, but our QB, Don Cummings, got knocked out of the game and we could not overcome that loss. Lincoln played extremely well that day, and that was probably their best team during my 3-year tenure as head coach, and maybe the best to this very day. Year 3 brought with it many player personnel concerns, as we lost senior QB Don Cummings, receiver Mike Behrens, and we were probably physically smaller than any college FB team in the nation. I wondered if we would have a winning season. Ron Toman, my teammate at Missouri and our offensive coordinator, was hired by coach Benny Ellender at Tulane. I took over the offense and was truly fortunate to hire Chuck Shelton from Pratt Jr. College, who I had faced during 3 of my seasons at Carthage. Chuck was a superb coach and became our defensive coordinator and one of my closest friends in life. We did have a cadre of great receivers returning, but the question was, did we have the QB to get the ball to them, and could our undersized O-line protect the QB? As it turned out, our receiver core of Tom Jardine, Larry Jones, Lenville Elliott would rival and surpass most any D.I.V. high school. All three would go on to play in the NFL. I'm guessing that no other D.I.V. 2 college ever had 3 players go to the NFL out of one class. We opened with the University of Northern Iowa on the road. As our undersized team got off the bus, you could hear the snickers and laughs as they equated us to a high school team. We beat them 19-8. A key play was due to Elliott's ability. We ran a quick toss left and Elliott ran for a TD. But, a penalty called it back. Elliott could throw a nice pass, and I suspected that if we ran a quick toss to Elliott to the right that their secondary would come up fast, so I called a quick toss pass. Elliott started right, their secondary came up to stop him, and he threw a perfect pass for a TD. Our next game was against Western Ill, who beat us on their home turf the previous year. Again, they had great talent, very well coached, but this time we prevailed 35-21. It was a spectacular effort on our part. We were now 2-0 and had beaten 2 universities with far greater resources than we had available. We had an open date the next week and the players wondered if they could go home. I said yes, but they needed to be back for our Sunday winning edge workout in sweats from 3 to 4 p.m. When that Sunday came, everyone showed up but 5 players, 4 starter including Elliott, Jardine, Jones, and Pete Robertson. After we finished our hour workout, I had the team go sit in the stadium seats and sent a grad assistant coach to the dining hall, knowing they would show up for dinner. Sure enough, they showed up, were intercepted and sent down to me at the game field. I explained to them that everybody else had made it back and that they were going to now run 10 miles 40 laps around the quarter mile track while the team watched, and that the team could not go to dinner until they all finished their 10 miles. This was a moment of truth because 3 of the 5 were future NFL players, but I guess that they thought they might get away with missing the workout by hanging together and because of their immense ability. However, I believe that if you fairly disciplined your best players, you would set the tone for the rest of the team. This 10-mile run would become a lasting legend among those Bulldogs for the rest of their life. Now in Game 3 we headed for Arkansas to play Arkansas State at Harding. We had beaten them the year before at our place, and perhaps our players were a tad overconfident. We had 5 turnovers and played without Elliott, whose wife was having their baby. Trailing by 2 TDs late in the game, we tried some special plays that just didn't work and came home with what would be our sole loss for the year. It was our worst performance in 3 seasons, but it would launch our next 7-game winning streak. We would go undefeated in conference play, be the first team to go undefeated in conference play since Lincoln University joined the conference, and we were but the 3rd team in Bulldog history to go 9-1. We led the league in defense but did not have a starter over 200 pounds. In fact, out of our top 22 starters off and def, only our center and fullback were over 200 pounds. The average line in this era was 220 to 230. Our final game was against the University of Missouri at Rolla, a great engineering school and tough at home. On this day our team played as close to perfection as possible. We won easily, 44-13. After the game, the longtime retired Rolla coach, Gail Bullman, told me that this was the greatest team he ever saw play in the MIAA. On that day we were awesome. I did not know at the time that this would be the last game I coached, but in retrospect, what a great game to end my coaching career. Our 9-1 finish enabled me to also be voted as runner-up college division coach of the year in District 6. I finished second by one vote. Our program had matured greatly in my 3 years as head FB coach, and looking ahead to the 72 season, I had 18 of 22 starters returning. Our teams were a rare mix of immense skill position talent and a group of undersized players who excelled beyond their size. I was also blessed with a cadre of assistant coaches who were immensely talented. Dr. Bill Richardson on our 69 team was the best combination of teacher and coach I ever met. Ron Toman, our offensive coach in 69 and 70, had a great passing game. Bruce Craddock as our line coach got the very best out of our undersized line in 69, 70 and 71, and coach Chuck Shelton led our league-leading defense without a 200-pound starter in 71. All went on to sterling careers. Among our players I had three who could high jump 6 feet 8 inches, the world's fastest 400-meter runner. Larry Jones at 45.2 seconds and the national long jump and triple jump div. 2 champ Tom Jardine. Lenville Elliott, Jones and Jardine would play in the NFL, and Craig Ozadnik and Marvin Robinson would play in the New World FB League. Ozadnik was an inside linebacker who made it to the final cut with the St. Louis FB Cardinals as a strong safety, having never played in the secondary. He was amazing and probably my greatest overall defensive player. All three teams were inducted into the Missouri Sports Hall in 2012, and at that time only one other collegiate team s had garnered that honor. We had a great turnout of players and family members for that induction. In excess of 140. Our three-year record of 22-5-1 was an .804 winning percentage and was only exceeded by the legendary teams of Don Foro with a .816 margin. Ironically, I would be part of Coach Foro's last freshman team at Missouri. We were co-champs twice and sole champs in 71. My president was Dr. Charles McLean, who became a lifelong friend and may well have been the greatest college president in the history of Missouri. He died in 2015, just a week before I was to have lunch with him in Columbia. As 1972 began, my thought shifted from FB to politics as I was becoming increasingly concerned about what was occurring in America. The great divisions created by the Vietnam War and racial tensions were prominent on many college campuses. Seeing our American flag burned was more than I could tolerate. My frustration the war was that we were not fighting to win. Our generals were being politically overridden by press. Lyndon Johnson. I remembered the words of Gen. Douglas MacArthur, who stated 10 years before Vietnam, a democracy cannot fight a no-win philosophy war, because it will divide your people at home. I was planning on running for Congress in the 9th District of MO. From Kirksville to St. Charles, as I had a FB TV show during the season and had achieved a level of name ID in NEMO. However, the legislature was unable to redistrict the state and it fell to the courts to do it. Their plan took only my county Adair out of the 9th district and put me in the 6th district, which ran westward from Kirksville to North Kansas City. I was now at the opposite end of the most populated areas with far less name ID. But, in my mind, the die was cast and I would resign from my coaching position and leave the players I had come to love and respect to seek the 6th congressional seat and embark on a new chapter in my life and for Peg, our three kids and Saben.